Nothing But Blackened Teeth by Cassandra Caw. Chapter 2. The mansion was colossal, bigger than it should have been, taller. In the dregs of my mind, a voice frothed with questions. Is it meant to be so big? Had I misremembered? Were all Heon houses 2 stories or more? It didn't make sense. But here the house stood. Though only 2 stories, each floor spanned at least 12 rooms and several self-contained courtyards. Its symmetries united by aesthetically decorated corridors. Every wall in the building was lavish with corroding artwork of the yokai. Kappa and the 2-tailed Nekomata, kitsune cowled like housewives, bartering with egrets for fresh fish. Domesticity as interpreted through the lens of the demonic. We poured across its space, alone and together, sifting through its ruins. In one room sat terracotta monks, heads weighed with ancient regret. In another, dolls with mouths lathered black. In another, books, or at least the corpses of books. The volumes were much eaten by insects, infested. Edifices infested with egg chambers, withered from the rot. Despite the horror of the visuals, they did not smell of anything but dark green wetness. The night stretched, chandeliered with fireflies and stars, and the last cicada songs of the year. The world coloring indigo dark. Music wafted from the next room. Taylor Swift and Coldplay and Carly Rae Jepsen. We'd chosen one of the ground floor dining halls as a loci for our celebrations. There were shoji screens there. These held the imagery of Tengu in repose to allow us to box cut the space into rooms. A little privacy, we joked, for the spouses to be. Backlit by torch glow, 2 shadows. Philip and Talia. I'd recognize their silhouettes anywhere. Rose and entwined behind the shoji screen to our right. And Faze, elbow deep before our party of supplies, halted to stare. Talia's laughter flickered, girlish and eager, a darting breath of sound. I wondered then as I studied Faze's face, the uncertainty in his pitch-mouthed worry. If he knew that Philip and Talia had been in lust once, and found myself worrying how much that answer mattered.
You okay?
I came to his side of the room. Yeah, why wouldn't I be? Faze swung looks between me and the shadows on the shoji screen.
No reason,
I said.
You just seem tense, that's all.
Long flight.
Uh-huh. His head kept metronoming. It isn't too late to head back to Kyoto or something, you know. Talia has wanted to get married in a haunted house since she was a kid. I'm not going to take that away from her. He swallowed hard between each sentence, face calcified.
Not after what it took to get us here.
I don't want to diminish Talia's wants and dreams here, but someone has to say it. I tried for a smile. Which freaking kid grows up wanting to get married in a haunted house? I mean, come on. The shadows on the other side of the shoji screen receded into tongues of slow swaying ink as Faze couldn't look away.
Cat.
Finally, Faze tented fingers and pressed them into his nose bridge, dropping his chin.
Whatever is going on with you, you have to stop. You can't let Talia hear any of this. Do you know how much it took to convince her to let you come?
I know.
Like rote now, my answer, all the arrangements of my fingers, hands bunched and pressed to my belly, held there under the roof of my ribs. It hurt to be made to shrink like this.
I know. You've told me.
I don't know.
You just what, Kat?
I thought of the rooms and ossuaries they'd become. The books separating flat-bodied beetles, hollowed in their decay. I think this is all a mistake. Us coming here, us being here, I think we're gonna regret it. That's all.
I walked away before Faze could answer. Could tell me again I'd been disappointing and staggered out of the room. The air was warm, summer wet in the plunge of the corridor. Someone had lit a lantern at the very end, and its light bounced against a bronze mirror, my image blurred in the surface. I tensed, expecting another figure to manifest in the metal. A broken-backed body dropped over the second floor, something tall and pale and faceless.
Sunomatsuyama namimo koanamo.
No, that wasn't right. An image bled into place. If Philip's ghost was real, she would be enamel and ink and a birdcage body. Its bones like filigree or fish spines, barely enough to cup its impatient heart. A girl in her bridal whites, jaw sharp with a promise. Her kisses close-lipped, without tongue or heat, like a benediction or a prayer or an ending. And her mouth, of course from its teeth through the tunnel of its throat, black. A car screamed into the dark, wheels gorging the soft earth outside, unmooring me from the revere. I heard the sound of mud splattering thin walls. Music pulsed through the bones of the building. Not quite dubstep, frenzied, cheerfully experimental. Too excited to have ever molded the ecstasy glued into symbolic choreography. But that had always been a plus point for its most stringent advocate. He never liked fitting in. Lynn, I thought. He was finally here. I couldn't let Lynn see me in my previous state. So I detoured to wash up, wipe the hauntings from the shadows of my eyes. Then I went back to the appointed communal space. A room occupied by low tables and paper cranes, polka-dotted cushions we'd purchased from a yen store. To find not only Lynn, but an icebox sweating on the tatami, its insides crammed with silver asahi cans and bottles of carbonated yuzu. A massive cast-iron pot, black and sensible, ready to be engorged with protein and vegetables. Open Tupperware littered the rotting tables, stuffed with even more ingredients. Meatballs, pork tenderloin, glistening swabs of white chicken breast, tofu cubed and marinated, whole fish preserved in cradles of frost, eyes glimmering in silver, sirloin, short ribs, ribbons of thinly sliced beef, even cuts of marbled wagyu. Bushels of spinach, napa cabbage, as many varieties of mushrooms as I could name. In the corridor separated from the main selection were livers and fresh hearts, and trip, offal so fresh they seemed on the verge of animating.
If you're going to debauch history, go big. Everything's better with cheese. Come on. Let's just dump all the meat into cheese. Make a fondue. I brought 6 types. Artisanal stuff. You guys appreciate the value of overpriced rotten milk, right?
Lynn looked a plastic bag, bulging with trapezoid shapes. Philip sitting crisscross legged opposite.
Cat!
He bounced onto his heels, liquid and limber. Parkour, he told me over drizzly excited emails, was becoming his new religion.
It made sense, Lynn confided.
Martial arts shaped his past. Free running would direct his future. And if he was the only one who could divine the connection, well, that was hardly his error. Lynn was ahead of his time, ahead of the curve, ahead of us all, with a Wall Street job, a Wall Street wife, a brownstone mortgage, and a hydroponic herb garden with a broke little balcony.
Lynn! Cat!
But he was still my Lynn. And when he crushed me into his sternum, I realized without surprise that I was still his cat as well. I pressed our old name for him into his shoulder, hugging him back, breathing him in. Lynn smelled of intercom travel. Sourness under a caking of deodorant, a splash of cologne. He pulled away, reaching an arm over my shoulder. Shadows deepened the hollows of his eyes with plum. The only outward sign of exhaustion.
Is FaZe still in the other room?
Said Talia. We turned, 6 years of complicated history rolled back up and reholstered, all for the sake of the blushing bride. Talia stood taller than all of us, mouth pinned in a line like police tape, lipstick moody against brown skin. She'd changed out of her travel clothes into a yukata, painstakingly tailored for her frame, white moths burning into cinders on a spiral of navy cloth. Her expression fell as they crossed my face, collapsed entirely at the sight of Lynn.
Who?
Said Lynn. He was one of your groomsmen.
I had like 16 groomsmen. You can't expect me to remember them all.
It was an event, after all. You made him fly to Iceland. Talia thinned her mouth. Lynn draped an arm around me.
I made everyone fly to Iceland.
He's the reason you're here. We're getting married. That's the whole point. You came here.
Oh, that. Lynn glanced at me, smirking. I thought I was just here to see Kat.
I froze. Long enough for Talia to see and for her mouth to weigh with condolences. Lynn, though, with his thoroughbred wife, and his immaculate life, still blind from those late-night Manhattan nights, took no notice at all.
He was supposed to get our surprise from the car.
Talia flicked her attention to Philip, hopeful. We wanted to do something for you guys. Like, it's crazy that you got us a full holiday to Japan. First class, too? I interrupted.
Technically, it was Philip...
Yes, yes, Trust Fund Baby paid for the bulk of it. But you all helped. You all did the very best you could. And it matters to me. To us. You have no idea. Her expression went soft. A perfect act. She flattened a palm over her heart. So, we wanted to do something for you. Except... that FaZe is missing his cue. Enclosed on Talia's ribs was an entire vocabulary of sighs, each one layered with delicate subtleties, every labored exhaustion unique in its entomology. She raked a hand through her hair, sighed for a third and fourth time. I'd lost track at this point. Her gaze skated to mine, chagrin expressed with an aching of penciled brows. Your fault, declared the grim expression. No reprieve in stock.
I'm here. Sorry.
FaZe's voice came from behind a shoji screen, quickly overshadowed by a shrill of splintering timber, worm-wounded fibers coming apart. The panel to our right shuddered before it fell over. No fanfare. No collateral damage to the adjunct architecture. Not even a plumbing of gray dust. Only an audible smack as it hit the floor. A sound like a palm colliding with a cheek. We froze like hares.
Shit,
said FaZe. Lynn was the one to break the spell. He laughed, jackal-throated and giddy. It was somehow enough. We sagged into ourselves. Small talk dispensed like so much recreational Valium. FaZe stood smiling at us from behind the devastation. 6 feet and not quite of shame and self-loathing. He cradled a stack of slim rectangular boxes, each package wrapped in glit, bows on every one.
Sorry.
We laughed as a group this time, and we all sounded drunk on being alive. Philip got up and walked over to FaZe, punching the other man square in the shoulder, hard enough to dislodge his cargo. The gifts tumbled free, gloss and gold-trimmed ribbons. Philip caught them all, naturally. One-armed and effortless. Golden boy to FaZe's dross.
This, Lynn muttered with too much glee, is how supervillains are born.